Coming up, well, they stare out of the photograph looking youthful, optimistic and alive. For many of them, that was not to be the case. It's a group photograph taken during the First World War of young men from the Royal Berkshire Regiment, taken almost 100 years ago, over 100 years ago now, and one man has spent 21 years researching the life stories of those men, tracking down relatives. It's a remarkable book, one of the most moving books I think I've ever held in my hands and flicked through. I've read it in detail now. It's called A Group Photograph, and Andrew Tatham, the man responsible for this history and art project, joins us on BBC Radio Berkshire after this.
Berkshire News and Berkshire Stories
with Paul Ross.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
The Bee Gees on BBC Radio Berkshire, and you win again. Now, they stare out from this photograph, taken over 100 years ago now, from the Royal Berkshire Regiment. Young men in their uniforms, most with moustaches, short hair, slick back, with swagger sticks, looking older than their years. Many of them, of course, late teens, early 20s. The Royal Berkshire Regiment, and it's a group photograph. And it's a group photograph that somehow fired the imagination, the creativity and the expertise of one man who has made it his business to track down the relatives of each and every person in that group photograph, all 46 of them. He has produced a remarkable book. It's very rare that a book actually, and I say this without exaggeration, and I say it slightly reluctantly, but it's true, I can only think of half a dozen books that have actually reduced me to tears. And this book is one of them. It's an astonishing journey. It has taken decades for this man to sort it out. And I'm delighted to say the man responsible for the History and Art Project, A Group Photograph, before now and in between, joins us now. Good afternoon and welcome to BBC Radio Berkshire, Andrew Tatham. Good afternoon, Andrew.
Good afternoon, Paul. Thank you for that. That's a fantastic introduction.
Well, let me before we ask about the photo, let me just show you one of the things. And the book is done not to exploit emotion. The book is done to actually mark the passing of these men, to talk about their legacies, you know, the families they left behind them. But I opened it at random the first time I got it. And I read about Ronald William Ronnie Breakspear. Now, of course, Breakspear Brewery, hugely important part of Henley on Thames. This man was born in 1875 in Henley. He died at about 3 p.m, you write, on Saturday the 2nd of October 1915. In 20 General Hospital, after the amputation of a leg shattered in action. Time on earth, you wrote, and this is what moved me about each and every one of them. Time on earth, 39 years, 10 months, 21 days. Why did you write time on earth below these men's histories?
Well, for me, this project, although there is a great connection to the First World War, it's about looking about what it is to be a human being, and each of us has a certain length of time on earth, and we have a lot of choices as to what we're going to do with that time. And also, there are loads of choices that are made for us that can limit that time or extend that time. And so the whole project was about human beings. And it was an exploration for me to, I'm trying to work out what I'm supposed to be doing as a human being. And then you have this thing, the connection to the First World War, which is these really extreme circumstances which really make people think about, you know, the choices they're making in life.
Now, how did you come across this photograph? And what was it about this one in particular, Andrew, that sparked this amazing quest, this journey of yours?
I'd been to the Imperial War Museum with a friend and her kids at half term, and there was a film in there of a burial party, and it moved me to tears. I decided I needed to read more. I'd always been interested in the First World War, but I did some concentrated reading and remembered that my grandmother had shown me my great-grandfather's letters from the trenches when I was about 16 or 17, and being a teenager, I remember very clearly that day when she showed me, but I did nothing about it. And here was, it was a lot of years later, and I remembered them, and they were in my parents' loft now. I went to find them, and I had to find out more. So I went to the Imperial War Museum, and they had the regimental history out there, and my great-grandfather was a commanding officer of the 8th Battalion Royal Berkshires, and in their section of the book was this group photo. And I had ideas about group photographs in terms of making artwork, and this one had actually had names underneath, so I thought, right, this is the one I'm going to do.
Even so, though, 46 men. You must have known this was going to take you years and years. And how long did it actually take you?
Well, it took me 7 years to find a member of each of the families and also to build the family trees of their direct descendants, which was one of the sort of goals I had in order to make one of the artworks that I made. And, you know, the thing is this 21 years, and, you know, and even that 7 year chunk at the beginning, there were big chunks where I didn't work on it. I ran out of money, or sometimes it just very much got on top of me and I didn't really understand what I was doing it for. But it always came back to me, and then I had various bits of luck along the way which enabled me to work on it, and then the ideas developed, and eventually I had this exhibition in Ypres last year.
Now, the American writer who took British citizenship during the First World War to show solidarity with his country, his adopted country, Henry James, once called death that distinguished thing. The problem with mass death, the mass slaughter that happened in the First World War and other wars, is it denies people that distinguishing death, that dignity. You've given these men back that by these amazing photographs, all the photographs you've tracked down of them at various stages in their life. So they become not just faces in a group photograph, they become human beings for us.
Well, I mean, that is the crucial thing for me, is that when you look at the original group photo, there is this uniformity, and they become a body of men, and I wanted to make them individual again and just try to think what it was like living their life and having their experiences.
And of course, many survived. I mean, I'm looking, for example, at the chap Mervyn Phippin Pugh, who becomes a prosecutor. Yeah. And you then, we see him before the First World War, we see him in his straw boat or as a schoolboy, but then you see him as a much older man. He didn't die till 1961. So it's life after life in photographs and in memories and the relatives.
Yes. Well, I mean, Mervyn Pugh is a particularly interesting example, because he actually went to school in Germany before the war for 2 years, and then he was still, I think he was probably 19 or 20 when the war broke out, was an article clerk to a solicitor, and then he went through the war. He was awarded the military, well, firstly he was very badly wounded in 1916, survived that. In 1917, he was awarded the Military Cross. In 1918, during the German Spring Offensive, at the age of 25, he took over the command of the 1st Royal Berkshires when all hell was breaking loose, and he saved a lot of men's life by getting a grip and getting them organised, and then had this long life. And there is the thing in the book, there's the picture of the tin helmet which saved his life, and which his family, you know, they know that is such an important artifact in their life, because they none of them would have existed without it.
In fact, people forget, I mean, of course, there was terrible attrition, and, you know, street after street of young men mown down before the Pals battalions were disbanded. But people also forget there were many villages and townships across this country where lots of young men went off to war and they all returned safely. And I saw a remarkable documentary made for American television, but about a British town, British village, where they'd got together all the people who were the relatives of those young men who returned, none of whom would have been alive had they died.
Right.
And that's the terrifying thing about these conflicts, almost the arbitrary nature of it, of who survives and who dies.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so much just comes down to luck. And also, it seems like some people are destined to survive. I mean, there are some, I mean, there's several of these chaps who, they were, you know, they said they just couldn't understand how they got through it all. And they, you know, there was half a dozen of them who went through five or six major actions and barely had a scratch. And they were seeing all of their friends and their soldiers dying around them, and they made it through. I mean, one memorably said, you know, I wondered what I was being saved for. And he lived with guilt through the rest of his life that he'd survived when so many hadn't.
It's a remarkable work. Andrew is staying with us, I hope. Can you stay with us, Andrew?
Absolutely, yes.
Andrew Tatham, the author of A Group Photograph, Before, Now and In Between. An absolutely remarkable, very beautiful book, but that's not its main purpose. More from Andrew Stay, Andrew Tatham, after this on BBC Radio Berkshire. It's simply read, Holding Back the Years. Simply Red on BBC Radio Berkshire, holding back the years. And we're in conversation now with Andrew Tatham, the man behind a group photograph, Before Now and In Between. It's a history and art project. It's a lot more than that as well. It's a kind of snapshot of 46 men's lives from the war, and a very rich and artistic snapshot indeed. Andrew's still with us. Good afternoon again, Andrew. Andrew, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
I can now. No, I'm particularly moved as well, intrigued by the fact that each man is given a stained glass window. You've created an artwork for each of them, a stained glass window. Each incorporates a kind of jigsaw puzzle piece, but you've chosen things that relate to the people's lives. And let me just pick up one in particular. I mean, everyone, as I say, all 46 have their stained glass. I was particularly intrigued by Douglas Eric Foote's one, because he was an interesting man, born in Pulborough in West Sussex. He died in 1915, killed in action at the 8th Royal Berkshire's second attack during the Battle of Loos. His brother was an air ace who survived the war, was then killed in a plane crash in 1923. But on the stained glass window you've created for Douglas Eric Foote, you've got a tiny badge from the Battle of Waterloo, which he says was picked up by his grandfather's uncle. So even all of these people seem to have that history of war on behalf of this country in their backgrounds.
Well, I mean, yes. I mean, I think they were, all of them would have been brought up with those ideas about Waterloo and the sort of patriotic ideals and everything. I mean, a lot of these guys didn't have a lot of military background. I mean, I think he's really, in some ways, a rarity. Because if you think about the sort of Victorian era, it was professional soldiering, and the regular army was relatively small, certainly compared to what it was in the First World War.
I just found it deeply moving that, of course, it was the Battle of Waterloo that effectively brought peace to Europe by and large for 100 years virtually. Peace on the main body of Europe. And then, of course, that was shattered in 1914. So here's somebody who's a kind of great-great-uncle survived the Battle of Waterloo, and his great-great-great, you know, grand-nephew dies on the field of Loos.
Yes. Well, I mean, this is also the thing that the Battle of Waterloo is even though it's a horrible, bloody affair, and, you know, you read about what Wellington said and all of that, about what happened on the day, it was still talked in very glorious terms. And that's, you know, there's all that sort of boys' own stuff that everyone was brought up with, particularly in the late Victorian and Edwardian era. You had that sort of gung-ho sort of attitude, I think, from all of that.
I also feel from reading this book, and you know what's coming, Andrew, that I know you, because in the very last flyleaf, you have included a picture from every single year of your life saying, look, I've invaded the privacy you might think of others. It seems only fair I should not be immune from scrutiny myself. And there's some amazing photographs here. What were you thinking in 1990? Were you on some kind of skiing trip when you were in classic kind of Ray-Bans, swigging from a bottle of wine or something?
And I had my arm round a large St Bernard. That was that time, you know. I mean, it's interesting looking at all of these pictures and thinking back. I mean, because actually, even this is not fully representative. If you're only picking one picture for each year, there's so much can happen in a year. It was like a lot of these things with the project, it's always very difficult to choose things which are representative when you have to make a choice.
And a couple of photographs quite clearly indicate your own links with the military. Tell us about those, Andrew.
Well, I was in the cadets at school, and I wasn't really the right shape for it when I was at school, and so I quit the cadets quite early because I just wasn't fit enough to deal with it. When I went to university, I joined the officer training corps, I was 7 years in the Territorial Army, so I. There's the picture in 1989 of me and my Argyll and Southern Islanders mess kit.
Now, the cap at a jaunty angle, I notice.
yes, well, I mean, this is the thing.
Directly above one of you appearing to be an Elvis Presley lookalike. How times change,
yes, Andrew. Thank you very much for pointing that out.
I must say, it's remarkable, but because it captures the humour, the vibrancy, the spirit of some of these men. Every life, of course, is a story. Every life could be a novel. You've certainly not done that, but you've turned each life into a kind of work of art, and each man is his own memorial in this book, which I think is a remarkable achievement, Andrew. How's it gone sales-wise? How are sales going of it?
Well, what happened was last year I was on. I had my exhibition started up in Ypres. It was a very big exhibition in one of the major museums in Belgium, And I was working the whole year to try and get all the artwork done, and the book was sort of done near the end of that process. And then we had the opening, and I came home, and it was only then that I could really start doing publicity on this side of the channel. And I wasn't getting very far, and then I managed to, via a friend, get in touch with Jeremy Vine and get on his show at the beginning of December. And having appeared on his show, and there were some very moving things that happened in that show, and it just, things exploded after that. So I've been selling maybe two books a day up until that point. At the end of day one on the Jeremy Vine show, I'd sold 1,600. And
it's a good job the BBC doesn't advertise, isn't it?
Well, well, I mean, this is the thing, is that I didn't have a chance during that show to actually mention my website and how people could find it, because that was the only way you can buy it. And it's still the only way, because the way the book industry works is it's very slow to pick things up. So you have to look for Andrew Group Photo. And my website is groupphoto.co.uk. That's where that's pretty well the only place you can buy the book, unless you know me.
Now, let's end, if we may, with a reminder of the Berkshire links in this. It's a very moving poem as a kind of dedication, introduction. And that's above a picture of a Royal Berkshire dragon carved in chalk from the first line of German trenches captured by the 8th Royal Berkshires at the Battle of Loos. And I've just opened again at random the story of Henry Cyril Thorne, later a lieutenant, of course, who died in 1916 in a place called Carency, Pas-de-Calais in France. And he's very much a Reading chap, born in Reading, because on his stained glass window you've included a Huntley and Palmer's logo. And, of course, Berkshire and Reading, well known for their biscuits.
Absolutely. In fact, I don't know whether it was just this battalion or there are other, maybe the Kitchener battalions of the Royal Berkshires were known as the Biscuit Boys. And one of the things with this group photo is that actually not many of them were Berkshiremen, but Cyril Thorne was. He was a clerk in the invoice office at Huntley and Palmer's, and a very keen sportsman, very known for playing sport locally. And there are these write-ups in the local paper when he enlisted, because he had a sort of meteoric rise. I don't think he'd ever done any military service before, but from joining up, it was 129 days before he was commissioned as an officer. So he actually joined the Hampshire Regiment at first and became a sergeant.
And then ended up as a lieutenant. Remind us again of the website, please, Andrew.
Groupphoto.co.uk.
As I said, it's an absolutely remarkable book. If you look at the website, you can make up your own mind. A group photograph, Before Now and In Between, a history and art project by Andrew Tatham, who's been very generous with his time for us this afternoon.